Okay, let's go ahead and begin. We'll have slides in just a few minutes. Power cord just arrived. That's always a good thing. Of course, we're having our, this is our Old Testament class. We've been doing this for 4 weeks. This is week five. And the first week was sort of an overview, and then we've done 4 weeks of covering the book of Genesis. This is the last week on Genesis. So we started out with Genesis 1, God created the heavens and the earth. We talked about the creation, talked about Adam and Eve, talked about the Garden of Eden, about them eating of the forbidden fruit from the tree in the middle of the garden, talked about the them being banished from the garden, about their sons Cain and Abel, how they were making a sacrifice to God, but Cain's sacrifice was not acceptable, and Abel's was a better sacrifice. And so Cain was jealous and killed Abel. We talk about the descendants of Cain and of Abel, and then that took us down to the time of the flood. In Genesis 6, Noah, who was descended from Seth, the third son of Adam and Eve, so they were God raised up Noah out of that line and told Noah to build an ark, which he did. It took him about 100 years. How'd you like to build a boat for 100 years? A big, big boat. You couldn't do this in your garage. And all your neighbors are, taking pot shots. What in the world is crazy old Noah doing, And so Noah builds the ark, loads up the animals, and it starts raining. And so there's the flood, destroys everything on the earth that's not in the ark. And they're on the ark for about a year, actually. The rain falls for 40 days and 40 nights, but the water continues to cover the earth for about a year. And then they land on, or come to rest. The ark comes to rest on Mount Ararat, and they come out of the ark. We talked about after that. One of the first things that happens after the flood was the Tower of Babel. The people were building this huge tower as a monument to themselves, basically, and God said, can't let them do this, so he decided to confuse their language so they couldn't communicate and they wouldn't be able to cooperate on such evil things as building this monument to themselves. And so they were scattered. Then we had, we're introduced to Abram, who became Abraham, one of the key figures in the Bible. And Abraham received a promise from God that through him all the nations of the earth would be blessed. He had a son that God promised to him when he was 100 years old, the son Isaac. And through Isaac, we have the blessing that eventually led to Jesus coming to the earth. Isaac was Isaac and Rebekah, his wife, had two sons, Jacob and Esau. We talked about them last week. Talked about how though Jacob was the younger son, he was the one that the promise came through. Jacob was a kind of a deceiver. He tricked his brother out of his birthright and out of his blessing from his father at his father's bedside at his death. So Jacob became the person through whom the promise was delivered, and not at all because of Jacob's righteousness. Again, it was because of Abraham, because of the promise God made to Abraham. And so that takes us to Jacob. And Jacob, of course, became known as Israel because he had struggled with God because of the wrestling with the angel. And while he was, the one thing we talked about last week, where he was afraid of Esau because he thought Esau was going to take revenge on him. But at any rate, that brings us up to Genesis. We're going to start in Genesis chapter 37. And in Genesis 37, we'll be talking about the 12 sons of Isaac, I mean, of Jacob, of Israel. So I am subject to say the wrong name sometimes, so just keep that in mind. I'm not crazy, I'm just insane, if that makes sense. Okay, so Joseph and his sons go to, we're going to talk about Joseph all the way through the end of Genesis today. We're going to talk about how the sons of Israel wound up in Egypt. In Genesis chapter 37, starting in verse 1, Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. This is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers, the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. You know, we had some sibling rivalry going on in this family. We'll find out more about in a minute. But there is, you know, Jacob had, you know, he had sons by Bilhah and Zilpah and Rachel and Leah. And so he had all these different sons that were half-brothers of each other. And so the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah would have been Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. Okay, so you know who those guys were. There was four of the 12 there, plus Joseph. Joseph was 17 years old, so keep that in mind. We're going to trace Joseph through the next 20 or so, or 27 years, something like that. And so at any rate, he's bringing a bad report to his father about his brothers. There was a lot of disharmony among these brothers. Joseph was the favorite. Okay, Joseph, his father loved him more than the others because he was born to him in his old age. He was born to him from Rachel, who was his favorite wife, you know. And, you know, a lot of things we're going to see here today kind of come from this playing of favorites and these rivalries in the family and people, you know, the brothers hating each other, and a lot of bad stuff happened. Okay, so, and you can kind of see that, you know, obviously the idea of having multiple wives sort of contributed to that. But also, what we'll notice is that despite that, God did something pretty wonderful, pretty amazing, despite all the evil that was going on and all the problems. So, in verse 5, we have Joseph having a dream. Okay, Genesis 37, verse 5, Joseph had a dream, and when he had told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. He said to them, "Listen to this dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field when suddenly my sheaf rose and stood upright, while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it." His brothers said to him, "Do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us?" And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. Okay. Yeah, here we have Joseph, again, one of the younger brothers. I mean, he had one younger brother, Benjamin, but he was the second youngest of the 12. And he's telling these other brothers that they're going to bow down to him. And they didn't like that one bit. So in verse 9, it says, then he had another dream, and he told it to his brothers. "Listen," he said, "I had another dream. And this time, the sun and moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me." When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, "What is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down on the ground before you?" His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now, this is a passage that you're subject to hear occasionally from a preacher trying to encourage you to have vision for the future or something. You know, you need to have dreams or something. That's not what was happening here. This wasn't a decision that Joseph said, you know, "I'm going to be a visionary person. I'm going to believe in good things for the future." This was a dream that God gave him. God intervened. Okay, this was God's prerogative, not Joseph's. But yet Joseph here was had these dreams, and you know he felt it necessary to tell his brothers about it. You know, which I find kind of very natural, actually. You know, if you've got children, you know that they're subject to want to one up the brother or the sister, you know. And here he had this dream that was very convenient to that purpose. So he tells his brothers about it. And, of course, all it does is promote the rivalry and the hatred that was already brewing there. Okay. So continuing on, verse 12 says, "Now his brothers had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, 'As you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, and I'm going to send you to them.' 'Very well,' he replied. So he said to him, 'Go and see if all is all as well with your brothers and with the flocks, and bring word back to me.'" So he goes, he looks for his brothers, and then he finds them in verse 17 near Dothan, verse 18. "But they saw him in the distance, and before he reached him, they plotted to kill him." Okay, now that's a pretty extreme sibling rivalry. You know, hopefully our kids aren't quite at that point. But before they reached him, they plotted to kill him. "Here comes that dreamer," they said to each other. "Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams." When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him in this cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and to take him back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped off his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him in the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. So here they've decided, you know, you've got Reuben here trying to be, you know, at least marginally noble and keep from killing him. But you know, they're still willing to throw him in this cistern. And continuing on in verse 25, as they sat down to eat their meal, they looked and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh, and they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood." His brothers agreed. So Judah is also trying to think, yeah, we could kill him or we could sell him. If we kill him, we kill him. If we sell him, we get money. Now, you know, I don't know if that's why he's thinking, you know, obviously he didn't, you know, since we don't have to get blood on our hands. We don't have to do something that bad. So maybe there was an element of nobility in that too, although it's a stretch. So he goes on in verse 28, says, when the Midianite merchants came by, his brothers pulled Joseph out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites who took him to Egypt. Okay, now let's think about this for a minute. It's something that's easy to read right over and not notice. He talks about the Ishmaelites were coming. And then he says, when the Midianites came, he sold them to them. And then he says, yeah, but that was the Ishmaelites. Now, who was Ishmael? Ishmael was the son of Abraham, right? Through Hagar, the servant girl. Who was Midian? Midian was a son of Abraham through his second wife after Sarah died. Okay, there was Midian. Remember we pointed that out in our class earlier. There's Midian and another brother named Medan. If you look actually in the footnotes, one of these references to the Midianites, actually the Hebrew is Medan. Okay, Medanites. So you think, are these Ishmaelites? Are these Midianites? Are these Medanites? You know, well, apparently it was a caravan from all the commentaries I've read. It was a caravan that included all of the above. I mean, these were all like relatives of a large clan. And they were all traveling together. And so, yeah, the Midianites come by. But they were sort of all sort of lumped together as Ishmaelites in the sense that, you know, no, they were not all descendants of Ishmael, but they were all sort of part of that traveling group. And, you know, they were probably had some family resemblance, you know, they probably had intermarried. So it's probably kind of a blended group. So more than you want to know about that, but that's who, but they sold, ended up selling him to relatives, descendants of Abraham. Okay. So, verse 37:29, when Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes. He went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. Where can I turn now?" They got Joseph's robe, slaughtered a goat, and dipped the robe in the blood. They took the ornamented robe back to his father and said, "We found this. Examine it and see whether it is your son's robe." He recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him. Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth, and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in mourning I will go down to the grave to my son." So his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold Joseph in Egypt to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. So the Midianites, these descendants of Abraham, turned around and sold Joseph to the Egyptians. And so this is how Joseph ends up in the nation of Egypt, and he's been sold as a slave. Okay, so I have to catch up on my slides. I'm not very good at keeping my slides moving when I'm. Okay, so in chapter 38, we just have some pretty sordid things that happened. We'll just chalk it up to that. But basically, Judah has three sons: Onan, and Shelah. Married a woman named Tamar. The Bible says that Ur was evil and the Lord put him to death. That's pretty much all we get about Ur. Because of apparently there was a law in place. Remember, we're still hundreds of years prior to the Jewish law, the law of Moses being delivered. Yet apparently there was a law in place that it was the right thing for the the other son, if one son left his wife a widow, the other son to provide children through that wife. Well, Onan was not willing to do that, and therefore God put him to death. So now here's two of Judah's sons have been put to death because the Lord decided they were too evil to live. Judah said, well, I'm not going to give Tamar to the third son because he might die too. And so Tamar was left as a widow with no children. Subsequently, Judah encounters Tamar dressed in a veil so he doesn't recognize her, and he thinks she's a prostitute, and he goes and sleeps with her. So he leaves her his staff and his cord and his, staff, cord, and seal as a pledge. So, and she gets pregnant. So he finds out later on that Tamar is pregnant, and he's ready to burn her, put her to death for being pregnant until she brings forth these three things that he's left with her. And then he sort of humbles himself and says, she's more righteous than I am, because I should have given her to my other son. So anyway, like I said, some pretty sordid things going on in that chapter. And you think, what do I do with this? I'm not quite sure. One thing we know about Judah is that Jesus was descended from him. we know David and all the people in between. There's some pretty amazing people. The kings of Judah, the nation Judah, were descended from him. So God didn't write him off because of all this stuff, or didn't write him out of the will, so to speak. But the promise was still delivered, and it happened to come through his descendants. If nothing else, it shows that God's pretty patient. Although he did kill two of his sons, so, keep that in mind. Okay, so, there's obviously consequences to his sin. Chapter 39, basically Joseph is in Potiphar's house. He's been sold into slavery, as you remember. He's in Egypt, and he's a slave in the house of a man named Potiphar. Okay, in the latter part of verse 6 says, now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, come to bed with me. But he refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her. Okay. So of all the people we're going to encounter basically through today's class, Joseph is the one who's at least trying to do what's right beyond the rest of them by far. And he says here, he not only did he not accept the invitation, but he refused to even be with her. Shows some wisdom there. He says, the more often I'm with this person, the more likely I'm going to be weak at some point in time. So he wouldn't even be with her. Okay. He basically gives three kinds of reasons for not being with her. He talks about he was trusted by Potiphar. It's because of the honor. Just a matter of, I was given a trust and I'm going to be honorable with that trust. Okay. He talks about righteousness. I can't do this wicked thing. And he talks, and the third reason, godliness. He says, I don't want to do it because I would sin against God. These are three reasons why he wouldn't do that. Those are sort of the underpinnings of his righteousness that you see there. So basically, he avoids her. But he has some duties to do in the house. In verse 11, it says, one day he went in the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by his cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Okay. So, it's about all he could do. I guess he could have fought and tried to get the coat away. But that's not what happened. Verse 13, when she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servant. Look, she said to him, this Hebrew has been brought here to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until the master came home. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came here to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak. Verse 19 says, when his master heard this story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me, he burned with anger. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Okay. So, but while he was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warden. So the warden put Joseph in charge of all those held in the prison. And he was made responsible for all the things that were done there. The warden paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did. You know, we saw this with Potiphar, right? You know, everything he did, you know, Potiphar saw that he was being blessed, and so he gave him charge of everything. Now even the prison warden sees he's being blessed, so he gives him everything. You know, it's kind of a strange situation. You know, you think God is blessing this person in prison. But, you know, God is able to bless any kind of a circumstance. And here, you know, Joseph continued to be righteous. God continued to bless him. And even though he was in prison. Okay. So again, he was sold into slavery when he was 17. He's still in prison. He's been a slave. He's in prison. But that's been his lot since he was 17. In chapter 40, verse 1. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them into custody in the house of the captain of the guard, in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard assigned them to Joseph, and he attended them. After they had been in custody for some time, each of the two men, the cupbearer and the baker, the king of Egypt, had a dream the same night, and each dream had a meaning of its own. So they each had these dreams. And the cupbearer had the dream that involves a vine with three branches. It budded, it blossomed, it produced grapes, and then the grapes were squeezed into Pharaoh's cup. Joseph interprets that dream and says that basically the three branches are 3 days. In 3 days, you're going to be lifted up and you're going to put Pharaoh's cup in his hand again. You're going to be restored to your office as the cupbearer. Okay. The baker had a similar dream, seemingly similar. There were three baskets of bread on his head, and the birds came and were eating the bread out of the basket. And again, Joseph interprets that dream. He says, in 3 days, Pharaoh is going to lift you up. He's going to hang you. You're going to die in 3 days. So, you know, one of them got a very good answer. One got a very bad answer. Both dreams were fulfilled exactly as Joseph had interpreted. And so the cupbearer is there, and he tells the cupbearer, he says, remember me when you come back to your office in 3 days, because I don't deserve to be here, and remember me to Pharaoh. But he forgets. So Joseph is still in prison. Okay, so we're up to chapter 41, and sometime later, starting in verse 1, when 2 full years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. So this is 2 years later, 2 years in prison after having interpreted the dream. 2 years had passed, Pharaoh had a dream. He was standing by the Nile, when out of the river there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat, and they grazed among the reeds. After them, 7 other cows, ugly and gaunt, came up out of the Nile and stood beside those on the riverbank. And the cows that were ugly and gaunt ate up the 7 sleek, fat cows. Then Pharaoh woke up. He fell asleep again and had a second dream. 7 heads of grain, healthy and good, were growing on a single stalk. After them, 7 other heads of grain sprouted, thin and scorched by the east wind. The thin heads of grain swallowed up the 7 healthy, full heads. Then Pharaoh woke up. It had been a dream. Pharaoh wants somebody to interpret his dream. He can't find anybody in his kingdom who can do it, except then the cupbearer suddenly remembers what he was supposed to have remembered 2 years ago. He says, you know, I just forgot about this guy. But he interpreted a dream for me, and it came through just exactly like he said, and also for the other fellow. And so Pharaoh says, okay, bring him to me. And so Joseph appears to Pharaoh in chapter 41, verse 14. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph, and he was quickly brought from the dungeon. When he had shaved and changed clothes, he came before Pharaoh. And he interprets the dream. And basically, the interpretation of the dream is this. So basically, there was going to be 7 years of a very full harvest, great harvest, followed by 7 years of famine. Okay, so that's what both dreams meant. The 7 cows, and then the swallowing up the 7 skinny cows, and the seven skinny cows swallowing up the fat ones, the 7 skinny heads of grain swallowing up the fat heads of grain. It's basically in the skinny years, they were going to eat stuff produced in the fat years. And so what Joseph did was he gave Pharaoh advice. He said, find somebody who's wise, appoint them over Egypt, and let them collect food during the good years so that they can feed the people during the lean years, because it's going to be 7 years of no harvest. And so Pharaoh says, that sounds great to me. All his officials says, that sounds great to me. And he says, where can we find anybody wiser than this man in whom God has put his spirit and is able to interpret this dream? So they appoint Joseph king over, not king, but ruler over all of Egypt, so that he would collect this food and oversee that for the next 14 years. So in one day, interpreting a dream here, God takes him from being a prisoner to being ruler over Egypt. You know, God turns his circumstances around in a way he couldn't have imagined, just like that. You know, and God can do that. Joseph had been righteous when he was in prison. He'd been righteous when he was a slave, and now God had a purpose in mind for Joseph, and so he puts him over Egypt. During the time of the 7 years of abundance, he collects food from all the people. And they collect a fifth of everything that's produced. Then during that same period of time, he has two sons. In chapter 41, verse 51, he named his firstborn Manasseh and said, it is because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. The second son he named Ephraim and said, it is because God has made me fruitful in the land of my suffering. Manasseh and Ephraim become what we know later as the two half-tribes in Israel, because they were, as we'll see later, they were reckoned to be Israel or Jacob's son, even though they were Joseph. Jacob declared that when he was giving them their blessings at the end. Okay, but they're significant. But you notice here he says that the firstborn Manasseh, because God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household. You know, the truth of the matter is, if he had really forgotten, he wouldn't have named him Manasseh, would he? You know, you know, he remembered. It's sort of like he said he made me feel better about things. You know, I think that's probably a lot of truth in that. But he was still, we're going to find out later that he was really still very emotionally affected by what had happened. So he becomes the ruler. And he's 30 years old when he becomes ruler over Egypt. 30 years old, so he'd been in prison since age 17. So that's 13 years in prison, or as a slave in Egypt. You know, those slave first and then prison. And so he's 30 years old. So in verse 56, when the famine had spread over the whole country, Joseph opened the storehouses and sold grain to the Egyptians, for the famine was severe throughout Egypt. And all the countries came to Egypt by grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the world. Okay. So people from all over the world are coming to Egypt because they have food. Nobody else has food, and no food is growing. So Jacob, back in the land of Canaan, they're having the same problems there. They're having famine. So he sends his 11, or actually 10 of his sons to Egypt to bring food. He says, I don't want to send Benjamin. He's my youngest. I've already lost Joseph. He's the only other son of my last two, and so I want to keep him here. So he sends the 10 of them, and so they go and they come to Joseph. They don't recognize Joseph. They bow down to Joseph as the dream had said, and they buy food. And Joseph recognizes them. In verse 42, verse 6. Now Joseph was the governor of the land, the one who sold grain to all the people. So when Joseph's brothers arrived, they bowed down to him with their faces to the ground. As soon as Joseph saw his brothers, he recognized them, but he pretended to be a stranger and spoke harshly to them. Where do you come from? He asked. From the land of Canaan, they replied, to buy food. Although Joseph recognized his brothers, they did not recognize him. Then he remembered his dreams, verse 9. Then he remembered his dreams about them and said to them, you are spies. You have come to see where our land is unprotected. No, my lord, they answered. Your servants have come to buy food. And so, you know, he's sitting here. He starts to mess with them a little bit, you know. You know, he's not totally over this thing, right? So he does some stuff to them. He basically says, okay, what you're going to do, you're going to have to leave one of your brothers here go back and bring to me your other brother. He questioned them about the family, found out they had another brother. You know, of course, he knew that already. But then he says, you're going to have to leave one of the ten of you here. Go back and bring your brother with you. Okay? And he says, you will not see my face unless you bring your brother. So they take the food, and they, he throws them in jail first, and then he says, okay, a few days later, he relents and says, okay, I'll let you go, but you got to leave one of them here. So they leave Simeon. So verse 18 says, on the third day, Joseph said to them, do this and you will live, for I fear God. If you are honest men, let one of your brothers stay here in prison while the rest of you go back and take grain back for your starving households. But you must bring your youngest brother back to me, or you won't see me. And so the brothers sit there talking among themselves and saying, you know, this is happening to us because of what we did to Joseph. You know, he says, didn't I tell you we shouldn't do anything bad to the boy? And they didn't realize Joseph could understand him because he was speaking to them through an interpreter. So he turns away and he begins to weep. You know, you can see just a bundle of emotions there that he can hardly sit there and face his brothers sitting there quarreling about, you know, we shouldn't have done that to Joseph. You know, here's Joseph listening to them. So Joseph orders that the money that they paid for the food with be put into their sacks and have them sent back to Egypt. And so they, on their way, they discover the money in their sacks. And they think, you know, now how can we go back? They'll think we stole the food. We didn't pay for it. You know, so how are we going to go? We're going to eat this, and then we're going to be out of food. We're not going to be able to come back to them. And so, but they end up, they go back to Jacob, and they eat that food. Next year, they're going to have more food. And so, but they realize they're not going to be able to see Pharaoh again unless they bring Benjamin with them. And Judah is unwilling to send Benjamin at first, but, you know, when you have no food, eventually you have no choice. And so he says, okay, send Benjamin, take Benjamin back. Here, take double money this time so you can pay for the food. Maybe it was just a mistake. You can pay for the food that was not paid for last time. And here's some gifts for Pharaoh. Maybe he will forgive you and sell you food. If I'm bereaved, I'm bereaved. So he let Benjamin go back. They go back to Joseph, to Egypt. And when they go back, they speak to one of the attendants and say, you know, they talk to him about the fact that the money was left in their sacks. And he says, we brought extra money to pay for the last food because we don't want you to think we tried to steal that. He says, don't worry about that. We got your money. Your Lord gave you treasure in your sack. You know, it's hard to know for sure exactly how that happened, but basically that's what he told him. He says that you don't have to pay for that food. It's already paid for. Then so they come in and they're going to dine with Joseph, which is kind of a strange thing given the way he had sent them away last time. He says, I want you to come to my house and eat with me. So they sit down to eat with Joseph, and so when they feed them, Benjamin's plate is five times as full as everyone else's, five times as much food. So he's definitely, and Joseph feels this connection to Benjamin, and he's making a big point here. But they still don't know who he is. And then he fills their sacks with grain, and he puts their money back in their sack, and he puts his silver cup, the Pharaoh's silver cup, in with Benjamin's sack, into Benjamin's sack, and sends them on their way. They don't know that that stuff's there. And so then he sends people after them to get the cup, which he put there, and says, okay, you know, whoever's sack this thing is in is going to come back and go to prison. And so they find it in Benjamin's sack. And, of course, Judah had to basically pledge his life and protection when he brought Benjamin to Egypt. He told his father, he said, you can, I will take full responsibility to make sure that Benjamin comes back. He says, you can hold it over my head. Make me give an accounting for what happens if he doesn't make it back. So here he is now looking at Pharaoh's going to keep Benjamin in prison. And he's not going to be able to, he's going to go back to his father without Benjamin after making those kinds of promises. So he pleads with Joseph for Benjamin. And in chapter 45 then, we're up to 45, Joseph, as Judah's pleading for Benjamin, Joseph could no longer control himself, verse 1, before all his attendants, and he cried out, have everyone leave my presence. So there was no one with Joseph when he made himself known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him and Pharaoh's household heard about it. Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then Joseph said to his brothers, come close to me. When they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it is to save lives that God has sent me here ahead of you. So Joseph here reveals himself to his brothers. A very moving, one of the more moving places in Scripture, I think. You know, because you see something, you know, some evil was done and it's being forgiven. And there's been a reunion and a reconciliation here of this family. And of course, the brothers are still terrified of him. But Joseph insists that they go back, bring their father, and he's going to take care of them in Egypt. Because otherwise, you're going to become destitute. You're not going to have any food. You're going to lose everything you have trying to survive. So come here, and I'll take care of you. And so they go back. They bring Joseph, Jacob back with all the brothers to Egypt. They settle in the land of Goshen, which is a good land for shepherds, which is what they were. They were shepherds. And, you know, it's kind of interesting. One of the commentaries I was reading talks about how God protected Israel by making them sort of disgusted